So every year, the Census Bureau surveys approximately 2.2 million housing units in the country. This year, they surveyed 5.2 million Americans in all 50 states and Puerto Rico. For the American Community Survey here in Indiana, 110,000 persons were surveyed. Here in the city of Indianapolis, 13,000. That's a big survey. Here is what we found in some key areas in the 2013 American Community Survey. In terms of overall poverty in this city rose last year. The poverty rate for families in this city, 17.7%, up from 16.6% the previous year, 16.5% the year before that, 16.3% the year before that. Poverty rate for families with children in this city has been stuck at a quarter of all families with kids. In 2013, 25.9% of all families with children lived in poverty. That figure has really not changed in the last 4 years. More than one-fifth, 21.2% of all Indianapolis residents lived below the poverty level last year, and that is a consistent figure since 2010. Child poverty last year, 30.4% of all children under 18 lived in a home in poverty last year, down a little bit from 32.8%, but comparable to 32.4% the year prior, 30.8% the year before that. Total number of people in this city living in poverty last year, over 192,000. The number of people in this city and county living in poverty has increased 38.2% since 2008. It's gone up every year since the recession started. Recession's been over 4 years. Statewide, 1 million Hoosiers lived below the poverty level last year. State's poverty rate went up from 15.6% in 2012 to 15.9% last year. Since the Great Recession, the number of Hoosiers in poverty, this is all of Indiana, has gone up 25.7%, which means the number of people in poverty in this city, the growth has been higher than the growth in the state. Poverty in the black community. 31.6% of African Americans in this city and county lived below the poverty level last year, up slightly from 31.4% in 2012, 29% in 2011, 24.8% in 2010. Notice, that's each year the percentage has gone up. It's not gone down. Percentage of African American children under 18 living in poverty, 41.7% last year, was 43.8% in 2012, 42.9% in 2011, 35.2% in 2010. It was a huge jump in poverty among black Indianapolis families last year. 30.4% of black families in this town lived below the poverty level last year. In 2012, the percentage was 25.4%. The year before that, 24.4%. Actual number of African Americans in the city and county in poverty is 78,239. Since 2008, the number of African Americans living in poverty has gone up 45.1%. Let's go to unemployment. 10.6% of Indianapolis adults were unemployed last year. That's down from 11% in 2012, 12% in 2011, and 13.3% in 2010. So overall unemployment has gone down each year for the last 4 years. In terms of overall unemployment, highest unemployment overall, this is all folks, Center Township 16%, Warren 14%, Lawrence 12.2%, Wayne 10.9%. Lowest unemployment included Perry Township 6.6%, Pike 7.6%, Washington Township 8.8%. Statewide, unemployment was 7.8% in 2013, down from 8.8% in 2012 and 10% in 2011. So unemployment's going down. Folks may be getting job, ain't paying much, but unemployment's going down. So if unemployment, Drew, went down among everybody, it's reasonable to assume it went down in our community, right? Black unemployment in our city county in 2013 was 19.3%. It was 19.6% the year before, basically unchanged. Unemployment went down for everybody in this town from 2012 to 2013, but it stayed flat for our black community. Of the six townships in Marion County with the largest black population, black unemployment was highest in Center Township, 24.4%. Lawrence, 23.9%. Warren, 22.4%. Black unemployment was lowest in Pike, 13.1%. Then Washington Township, 14.2%. Wayne Township, 15.9%. The only good news about black unemployment in Indiana was in 2013, it went down statewide. 16.3% of African Americans in Indiana were unemployed in 2013, down from 19.1% in 2012. So black unemployment went down in the state and stayed flat in the state's largest black community. Household income. Median household income, that's the midpoint. Half of all households are above this figure, half are below. Median household income for households in the city county, $41,345 last year, compared to $41,880 the year before, $40,668 the year prior to that, $41,533 in 2010. Basically, that's flat. Statewide, median household income was $47,529 last year, compared to $47,541, flat. Black median household income is also flat. In 2013, it was $29,767. 2012, $29,314. 2011, $29,599. This is the old Bill Cosby line. Okay, do you know how to tread water? No change. Home ownership. In 2010, 57.5% of all households in this city own their own home. That figure has now dropped to 52.9%. Since 2010, over 13,000 households have turned from being homeowners, Drew, to renters. That's a steep drop. We asked for some reaction, and we shared this data in advance with some key organizations and individuals. Congressman Andre Carson commented, quote, "The United States is often referred to as the land of opportunity, but today's report shows an increasing number of Hoosiers are feeling the pinch, struggling to make ends meet as inequality in the country continues to rise." The United Way of Central Indiana, Chris Herndon, senior vice president, said United Way recognizes that the 2013 statistics released today by the Census Bureau show an unfavorable trend for families in Indianapolis. This is why we focus on education and financial stability to help those in poverty become self-sufficient. The mayor's communication director, Mark Lauder, said, quote, "The continued slow recovery from the Great Recession and the general shift in the economy away from the high-paying manufacturing jobs of the past." He says that's what the data reflects. Lauder also stressed the mayor's commitment to, quote, "helping everyone escape the grips of poverty, including African-American residents and families," end of quote. Employ Indy, which is the agency allegedly responsible for workforce development and job training, the only comment about the stubbornly high black unemployment rate, spokesman Brian Van Bokelen could only say, quote, "Employ Indy's programs are available to all residents of Marion County and offer a wide variety of eligibility to touch the most people possible." The Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce declined to comment on the data, saying, quote, "We want to spend more time reviewing the data before we make a comment," end of quote. And the president of the City County Council, Maggie Lewis, and Vice President John Barth have commented on the data. They said, quote, "These disturbing numbers confirm what many across Indianapolis have felt for some time. It is harder than ever for families to make ends meet in this city. Worse yet, these numbers have been trending in the wrong direction for a number of years now," end of quote. When we come back, we have a great panel that will give their thoughts on this, including a representative of our governor's office. Really? It's After News with Amos, after these.
Turn up the radio. Hey, what's up? This is James Fortune of the James Fortune Show. I want you to join me weeknights as I introduce you to my J-Pod Hit of the Week. Well, what's the J-Pod Hit of the Week? Well, I've got so many songs in my iPod, and I
want to praise AM 1310, The Light.
And we've got a great React paddle. Drew has never seen this studio, you know, reach where the fire marshal has to come in. We got three or four more people than the fire marshal have to come. In the house, Mark Russell from the Indianapolis Urban League, Pastor Michael Jones, Progressive Missionary Baptist Church, Tammy Butler Robinson with Engaging Solutions and all of the kind of good stuff, State Representative Cherish Pryor, Erica Smith, columnist extraordinaire for the Indianapolis Star. But we thank those for coming, but we begin with Ryan Streeter. Ryan is one of the key policy people for Governor Mike Pence, because this data from the Census American Community Survey, many of the states in this country have similar data to what you've just heard for Indiana and Indianapolis, where poverty is up, unemployment is stagnant. The Washington Post pointed out that 15 states had grew in income inequality. Indiana was one of them, but to be fair, they included California. That's a blue state last time I checked. New York, well, we know there's income inequality there, but New Jersey and North Carolina, state of Washington, that's a blue state. But the figure, when I look through the data, on the second look that kind of struck me, Ryan Streeter, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Was the fact of 1 million Hoosiers last year were below the poverty level. That's a record high. Probably that number was last reached during the Big Depression. When you guys heard about that, what was the reaction? Was that even shared with Governor Pence?
Yes, it was, and it's. I think everyone would agree it's a discouraging number, and it's not a number that we had hoped to see. There are too many people living below the poverty line in Indiana, and I think that's clear. I think we can argue about the data and the fact that the increase was in the margin of error and all that stuff was in the report, but it's not really important. What matters is the percentage of Hoosiers who are living in poverty, and that's just something that we don't think is acceptable and that we want to change.
What can state government do? What can a governor of a sovereign state do? Because this is not just an Indiana problem, I'm sure, as Governor Pence talks to his peers, the other governors, whether it's at the National Governors Conference or others, he's hearing the same things, the same conversations going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that the first thing, and you've heard him say this before, is to create an environment that's amenable to job growth and investment, and that's what we have been trying to do by creating predictability for small business owners and other businesses. In context, I also do want to point out that despite the bad news in the census report, that we have been seeing a pretty significant drop in our unemployment numbers while our labor force has been growing. So that means more people are out looking for work, which means there's more work to be had, which is a good thing. Our unemployment since the low point of the recessions, our drop in unemployment is the third largest drop in the country. So that's a good thing. And I think a lot of that's been driven by the fact that we've seen a pretty strong growth in the manufacturing sector, which took a complete beating in the recession. To deal with the problems that are underlying the numbers that we're talking about here in the poverty numbers, I think we need to really double down on our efforts to make sure that we're providing people with the training and the education that they need for the jobs that are emerging out there today. That's where we're putting a lot of time.
One of the positive things I did see in the numbers was that statewide, African American unemployment was dropping, and it looked like it was dropping at a rate where we could see, okay, there's light in the end of the tunnel. But that means that African Americans in other places in this state are getting those opportunities that don't seem to be here. In fairness to the economic development efforts of the state, you all have done a good job in terms of bringing jobs to other parts of the state, whether it's to Kokomo, whether it's up to Elkhart, whether it's places in southern Indiana. I see all these job announcements and there's jobs in all different parts of the state where there are African-American communities and where people that live there. So we say, okay, if they're building a plant there, okay, some brother and sister is getting a job. Where it seems to be breaking down is those job development things actually happening in the state's largest African-American community. Are there things the administration can do to sensitize the Department of Workforce Development and Employee Indy to really understand. If I were great, and I know the governor likes to grade stuff based on performance. If I was looking at the performance of job development in Indianapolis and I see the one of the largest groups flatlining and showing no great decline, I would call them in and say, y'all, what are y'all doing? Y'all ain't doing a great job. Is it time for a wake-up call to ring the bell to workforce development that they need to get engaged with this community?
Great question, great point. And are we there yet? No, but are we doing the kinds of things that I hope would achieve that objective? I think so. The emphasis that the governor's put on career and technical education has spawned the creation of 11 regional works councils. And I think the works council that's active here in central Indiana is doing a good job. I think they're very active, and I think they are putting kind of new pressure on the system in a new way. The thing that I think is really exciting about that initiative is that it's responding directly to the questions we get from companies that are looking to move to Indiana, more specifically Indianapolis, about the skill levels of the workforce. And to date, we just haven't done as good a job as a state preparing people with the kind of training for the jobs that employers say they actually have. And what this new effort is all about is making sure that the employers themselves are saying, these are the kinds of jobs we've got, these are the kinds of skills that are needed, and we need our career and technical education programs and then our other workforce training programs to be training people in those jobs. So really having kind of real-time information from the job market is something that we're working on, investing a lot in technology there, but creating new partnerships with these works councils to do that. I'm hopeful that in the next year, you know, in 12 months, I could come back and actually start putting some numbers on that.
I want you to tell Workforce Development to come on this program because they ain't bothered to want to explain anything. But I'm still trying to be nice and try to be bipartisan in here.
We'll get him there.
And he's sitting right next to State Representative Cherish Pryor. Representative, welcome. Your reaction to the numbers. What stood out for you?
Thank you for having me on the show, Amos. I think I was pretty disappointed in the numbers, to say the least. The income, the poverty level in the African-American community, the fact that it seems like the majority community is receiving the recovery, but in the African-American community, we're still struggling. Particularly here in Marion County, as opportunities become available, people that I talk to want jobs, they're looking for jobs. However, they're not getting those jobs. So that's kind of what stood out to me and was disappointing to me as I was looking at the information. And when I looked at even, the number of African Americans that are covered, by health care, I was disappointed, with that as well. It seems like, in too many categories, and it happens year after year after year, all of the negative numbers are high in the African American and minority communities, while other communities, the majority community seems to be getting better. And so I think as a state, we really need to focus on ensuring that everybody who contributes to the great state of Indiana not only are contributing with their dollars and their taxes, but they also are receiving the benefit of opportunities that become available in this state.
Tammy Butler Robinson, you done put all kinds of notes over there on your thing. What stood out for you? What your initial reaction?
My initial reaction is that I was glad to see that overall the state unemployment had dropped, but was still very concerned when you look at the black unemployment numbers. And then when you couple that with the poverty, it's very concerning when we continue to look and see that there's more than 40% of black children that are living in poverty. And what are we doing to be able to address that as a community? And so that was my immediate response was I was glad to see unemployment seem to be falling statewide. But then I was really concerned when you began to look at the poverty numbers continuing to be where they are, and especially with our African-American children, because often it's always said that the indication of the well-being of a community is where the well-being of our children.
Pastor Michael Jones.
Yes, sir.
Your reaction?
My immediate reaction is somewhat connected to what Tammy just shared. Looking at the numbers individually, you see some positive, but when you put them together collectively, there are a few other questions that need to be raised. For example, when you see statewide that African-American employment and all employment is going down. That is, generally speaking, a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start looking at the poverty numbers and seeing a million people in poverty, you begin to wonder, what are these jobs that people are getting?
Mm-hmm.
Are these the kind of jobs that can provide sustainable life for a family? Or are these people who are employed but underemployed, mm-hmm. who are getting a paycheck, so they're employed, but they're not getting the kind of paycheck that can provide for a family? So you have mm-hmm. children in poverty increasing. You have poverty statewide increasing. It is odd and a question that must be raised when you say, okay, unemployment is down statewide, but poverty is up. So if more people are working, where is the income? Where's the money? And that's one of the challenges we have to look at is not just do people have jobs. Are the jobs that people have the kind of jobs in a city like in the city of Indianapolis and a state like Indiana where we're a family-oriented place? How do you raise a family if you can't pay for it?
You know, I was going to come bounce back to that. Just in the city of Indianapolis, and this is and this also flavors the poverty numbers. In the African-American community, only 23.7% of households are married couple families. Well, mm-hmm. you expect that low number.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In the Latino community, just 40% mm-hmm. of Latino households are married family. That goes against the perception mm-hmm. that exists that that's a family-oriented community. In the white, non-Hispanic, regular white folks community, in Marion County, only 41.5% of households are married families. So all three of those together tend to lower income and open up that door for poverty to go up. And I know, Ryan, I know the governor feels very strongly about unified families. I know that that is one of the, that's something that comes not only from the head and the heart, but seeing these statistics in the largest city in the state with all of groups, is that something concerning that we're figuring out how to raise incomes if it's just one head of the household?
Well, there's plenty of work done on that. It's a great point. And clearly, when you have single parent households, you just have less income for that family. And that, there's lots of literature and lots of social science and economic research about what the effects mm-hmm. of that are on childhood outcomes. But I think to this larger point, whether it's a single parent that's leading the household or if it's a two parent household, I think that the skill levels of the head of that household are what we have in our sights mm-hmm. right now. And, you know, we run into companies, businesses every day, both here and across the state that say that they've got, new types of jobs available right. that they don't have people skilled for. And that's where we need to really focus on, because I think there's a great opportunity there, to match people's aspirations with those kinds of services that provide the right kind of training.
Erica Smith, your reaction to the data.
Well, I think it kind of mirrors a lot of what's already been said, but I think I really wasn't surprised to see some of the data out of Marion County in particular because of the jobs. It's not that just that the unemployment's going down statewide, but it's not just that there are jobs available, but again, it's what kinds of jobs. And on top of that, you know, we don't really have a very skilled workforce here in overall, and we're talking about the black community here in Marion County. And so the jobs that are there, people can't quite qualify for. It's not even just about high school education, but it's about what education do you have, what remedial learning do you have to have. Even some of the simplest manufacturing jobs today aren't that simple, and they require additional education. So I am glad the governor's looking at that and talking about, you know, career learning and other forms. But I think in the meantime, we have to look at the short term as far as what kind of workforce we have, what kind of jobs are available, but in the long term, look at the sustainability of the types of jobs we're bringing into the state. Is manufacturing really something that's going to sustain us over the next 50 years? Is it going to be, are we going to continue to play to the lowest common denominator? Those are the kind of concerns that I have when I look at this data and income inequality overall.
Mark Russell.
Amos. Again, thanks for inviting the Urban League here. Two things jump out at me. One, in terms of black poverty. And I don't think this can be understated. If you go back to President Roosevelt's address, his second inaugural address in 1937, he said, I see one-third of a nation ill-clad, ill-fed, ill-housed. Mm-hmm. And there was a Great Depression in the United States of America. What we have here for black families in Indianapolis is a Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And we need to acknowledge that. What we need is political and civic leadership to answer that call because our families are struggling. If you look at the education data in terms of educational attainment, in the black community, 15.6% have less than a high school diploma, 30.9% have a high school diploma, which includes GED degrees. That's 45% of our population.
One of the other things in educational attainment, I noticed the first time I'd seen a drop in the percentage of African Americans 25 and over who graduated college. My first reaction was, okay, that's a wobble in the data. Wait another year to see does it wobble out. But then the other thing I thought, and may want, you know, Mark and Erica's thought on this, if a college educated person isn't perceiving that their job opportunities here, did they leave and they were replaced by somebody that's coming in with lesser education or lesser experience? So we're losing some of our educated core, because I don't think we've ever had a dip in college graduation rates in this community since I've seen the data. Mark, you?
Well, I think, excuse me, again, Amos, it coincides with some very disturbing trends, not only on the national level, but here in Indiana. I attended IU Bloomington from 1982 to 1986. When I was president of the black student body in 1983, there were 1,500 black students enrolled in the Bloomington campus. Mm-hmm. Today, there are less than 800. Mm-hmm. That is not progress. And of those 800 that are there, you generally have a very high attrition rate, so that you have more females than males graduating. And then even with the students, you're going to lose one third to one half of those.
Right. Erica?
Well, I think it's a couple of different things. I think it's, again, the types of jobs that are available. If I'm a college graduate, and even if I'm from here, I go to IU, I go to Purdue, you have your choice a lot of times of jobs these days. It's not saying the job market right. is the one most wonderful thing on the planet, but it's still you have a better choice of jobs. And it's a question of, do I want to make $80,000 here or $60,000 here versus going to another city which may have more amenities and make $120,000? It's as much about quality of life as it is about money, as it is about the types of jobs you're getting. And just speaking as a young professional who's moved here from elsewhere, it's a matter of, can I make enough money to move? Because young professionals are moving these days. It's not mm-hmm. like people are moving to a state and staying. So if you move into a market like Indiana, which has a lower level of personal income than a lot of other states, median level of income, if you don't necessarily have any ties to the state, you don't have family here, you didn't grow up here, there's not a lot of incentive to stay here. Because if you stay here, you're going to be stuck at a level of income that's hard to get out of if mm-hmm. you want to transfer to another state, because you're making the financial argument to another company in, say, California and Illinois for Chicago, that I need to make $40,000 more than I'm making here, not because just to make up for the cost of living and a raise. So it's, I can see why people would want to leave, because it's just not a lot of incentive to stay unless you have family or connections here that you want to stay.
Ryan Streeter with the Governor's Office. I know you got another engagement. I want to be fair to your time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
For being here. We'll continue with this discussion with Representative Cherish Pryor, Erica Smith, Tammy Butler Robinson, Michael Jones, and Mark Russell, and then inject your feedback at 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com, or send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. This is the show the Chamber of Commerce doesn't like, because there's a bunch of problems. But when I come back, I want to get the reaction of the folks on why the chamber didn't want to respond, because they had to study the data. I thought they had people in the Chamber of Commerce that can look in data and analyze it in an hour. And come on, the governor's people can do that. They can analyze stuff in an hour and say, well, there's bad stuff, but we found some good stuff too. We'll be back with more after these.
Thursdays on TV One, you'll always find plenty of love and laughter with I'm Unique in the Crew on Love That Girl.
Make it rain, Mr. Jones. 3-5.
If you've been treated unfairly because of your race, gender, or having a disability, call the Indiana Civil Rights Commission today. A friendly intake specialist is ready to assist you for your free filing of a complaint of discrimination. What are you waiting for? Call now, 317-232-2600.
Hello, this is Pastor Michael K. Jones, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310. You may have reaction to what you've already heard. One of the things is, and this kind of surprised me, when I reached out to a number of institutions, and one of them was Employ Indy, and I said, here's the data. Here's some highlights of the data. What's your reaction? And Employ Indy sent me this long statement talking about all the wonderful programs they have. And I said, okay, that's fine, that's nice, thank you very much, but I want your reaction to why African-American unemployment seems to be flatlining. And then they came back with this statement that I wrote that really didn't say anything. Is part of, maybe this is just me, y'all may agree or disagree. Is this the time to finally call Employee Indy to account? Because I don't think they have any visibility in the community at all. Nobody knows what they do. It would seem to me if your goal is to put people back to work and you have one large group of people that is not working, I would say that they failed at their job. I mean, is that going to be, as the community looks at this, as leadership, quote unquote, looks at this, is one of the targets needing to be Employee Indy? What the heck do you do? Because from where I look at it, they failed. Y'all may agree or disagree.
I think you have an excellent point, Amos. They should be wanting to hold themselves accountable for the numbers and what they're producing. And when they see big gaps in the unemployment numbers of any population, that should cause them a concern. If the state overall is doing better and your area is not doing better, then you need to refocus your efforts and try to figure out what you can do, figure out what those gaps are, and fill those gaps in. You know, and if you're getting a grade, then you're right. You know, they couldn't receive a passing grade because the community in Marion County, Indianapolis, is not doing better.
The other thing is on this decline in households that are homeowners. And the reaction from the mayor's office is, aha, this just demonstrates that all these young people are renting all these apartments and young people and empty nesters would rather rent than own. Okay, that's condos and apartments by and large. But when I look at the percentage of households that live in single-family housing, that hasn't deteriorated all that much. And then I hear these stories about companies coming in, buying up a bunch of foreclosed houses and flipping them to rentals. Is this the data now showing up that we've got large numbers of households living in houses?
I think, Amos, that's exactly the point. People are starting now to see the real effects of the foreclosure that took place, developers that came in, where people were talking about there's a whole lot of absentee landlords that exist today. And so the data is really starting to reflect that. When you look and see the huge decline in home ownership, and not only that, just the operations of several of the community development corporations that used to be that front door, that gateway for individuals to be able to access home ownership, especially if they had barriers in place. I went back and I was trying to find some of the HUD funding that was coming in regards to home ownership counseling and first time home buyer programs, and you don't see the same magnitude that we saw before. And I think on the flip side of that, also when you think about financing, what's happening with banks and the financing opportunities and the more stringent requirements, and where across the board, even if you have great credit, your score is not that great these days just because of the way that everything is being looked at. And so I think all of those become barriers to home ownership. In addition, when you go back to, if I don't have employment, if I'm living in poverty, how can I buy a house?
And they also help with the crime numbers. Mm-hmm. They also help, and they also help with the income disparity for when those who own the land and own the property make the money, and they're just extracting money from the community rather than sometimes putting it back in, because flipping houses and turning them into rentals is all about me making money. It's not really about necessarily providing you with what you need to grow. And rental, while I'm not opposed, anybody who wants to rent, God bless you, rent all day long. But ownership is a part of how you kind of make it's part of how you build your own portfolio, for one. And if you don't own anything, you don't own anything. And the second thing is it also helps to anchor communities. Where there's no ownership, there's not as much investment.
Erica?
I would say I would agree with actually all of that, but I think the other thing is I do think the mayor's office does have a point. I do think maybe as a part of the foreclosure crisis, I think owning a house just isn't attractive as it used to be. I mean, people look at it not so much as this ability to be able to make money and have wealth and pass it on to a generation. They look at it as an albatross that's kind of like stuck out there as people are upside down on their mortgages, and it doesn't have the same cachet as it once did. And then you do honestly have a generation of people who would just really prefer to rent because they want to be mobile. So I do think obviously Indianapolis' population is becoming very wealthy and very poor, but I do think both of those things are at play there.
But is it also something where, because I've had in about the last 6 weeks a few callers who, when they call with a problem, the problem seems to stem between a renter of a house and an owner of the house next door. and it just kind of stuck in my mind when I saw the data, and I'm going, oh, maybe that's why I'm getting these rash of calls, because this is what's really happening out here in the street.
And I think even when you do have mixed income, integrated communities, as even Pastor Jones talked about, it's okay that people want to rent, even like what Erica stated, because there are people that are mobile, people that are saying, you know what, especially when you look at the household makeup now, composition, if it's not two-parent households that are there, it's a mom, they want to be close to downtown, the father or the like. And so you do see those dynamics that exist, and those opportunities should be available for those that choose that type of housing. And then when you start to have communities where there's a renter and there's a homeowner, then there needs to be education, because there's usually not that same type of investment by that renter that's there. And so that's where the landlords have to hold those renters accountable and making sure that there's connectivity in those communities.
Amos, I just wanted to interject something real quick. If you look at the statewide median household income for the state, meaning that point that half of people make that much, make more or less, the state income level for median households was $47,529. Mm-hmm. Right? For black median households in Indianapolis, the median, the midway point, was $29,767. Mm-hmm. Home ownership is not viable when you're making $29,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so these options about renting is not an option, it's a necessity.
239-1310. Now, I've been reluctant to throw this bomb out here. But when I went through the data, one thing that stood out, and I knew, and I said, oh my goodness, if I put this on the radio, all heck's going to break loose, is when I looked at unemployment in Marion County, and you got 10.6% overall unemployment, 19.2% for African American, 7.8% for white non-Hispanic, and 5.9% for Hispanic. So my first thought was, okay, that's a wobble in the data. Well, my second is, wait a minute, they are all working. When you get to 5 to 6% unemployment, that's full employment. That's everybody that want to work is working. And I'm going, you got the Hispanic unemployment rate better than the white unemployment rate, almost three times the black unemployment rate. Is that another problem? That we got people that employers would rather hire someone Hispanic than someone African American.
Well, and yes, and I think the interesting thing that we need to look at, particularly for our elected officials, both state and local, is what is the correlation between these unemployment rates and crime. So, as the summary that you put out on the station indicates, in Indianapolis major townships, overall unemployment ranged across the board 16% in Center, 14% in Warren, 12.2% in Lawrence, 10.9% in Wayne. I would venture, I bet you a soda pop, as you would like to say, that those also are the places where the crime is highest. It's not just a matter, it's a matter really of public safety to address this employment crisis.
And you know, Amos, this is one of the main reasons why we really need to focus on increasing the unemployment, increasing the minimum wage. We have stayed at the, $7.25 forever. And a person cannot survive. They can't purchase a home on that amount of money. They can't raise their family on that amount of money. We continue at the state house to give tax breaks and tax breaks to businesses. The data that we're seeing clearly shows that doesn't work. You know, if you turn on the TV, you'll see ads from the state of New York talking about move your business here. You don't have to pay taxes. But their numbers aren't that good either. Mm-hmm. So what is that saying? We're giving all these tax breaks to the businesses, but what we're not focusing on is how we can help and improve the lives of the people who actually live here. The best way to do that is to increase the minimum wage for people. That gets people out of poverty. That allows them pride. It gives them opportunities to purchase a home. It gives them opportunities to have health care. It gives them better opportunities and choices for their kids' education. All of the numbers go positive when people have money in their pocket.
Let me go to Ms. B at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello. How are you today? How are everyone there?
We're fine. What's up?
I was thinking that the reason why a lot of people don't buy houses or be in homes or move out is because of utilities. You buy a home, you got the lights going up, your gas going up, then your trash, you got to pay for that. You got to pay for fixing the house if something happened to it. It's a lot of things that keep people from buying homes. And then the jobs where people may not have a whole lot of education, but they should have training on these jobs instead of turning them away and talking about you got to know this and know that. They had it years ago that if you didn't know the job, they trained you on the job. And I think that's what's going on now. They don't do that anymore. All they want is you got to have the education or know how to do it.
But that's not the case. Most jobs today, they want to train you because they want you to do the work their way. You know, they'll tell you, just because you went to college, you don't know nothing. Let us train you in the such and such way. But doing that, good point, Ms. B. Let me go to Pam at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Of course, you don't have enough time to do all of this, but I'm calling because there are a couple of things that you mentioned. One of them, the disconnect with the Hispanic population, and a lot of Hispanics come over or are raised with a different mindset, and the mindset is more entrepreneurship than employment. So, and I say that to the African American community as well. I am two degrees in, and have been offered jobs at $10 an hour, $11 an hour, you know, and it has been more beneficial for me to freelance and contract myself out than to be insulted in the workplace. And I have had that happen so many times where it discourages me to even go back into the workforce because I can make the money on my own and be respected as a professional. And I think that especially with reentry and just with the disparities in unemployment, we have to look at skills, skill sets, skilled laborers, some of the two-year programs, some of the certification programs, and encourage entrepreneurship. Because culturally, that is the only way that historically we have really got ahead in this city when we go back. And just as a country, that is the way for African Americans to progress.
That's a great point, Donna. Maybe Donna should be the head of Employee Indy. Wait a minute, I'm still sitting here when they said, well, we have a lot of programs. I wouldn't know the programs and activities that Employee Indy had if they came out here in a big truck and a loud truck and started blasting, this is Employee Indy, this is what we do. So if you're listening, Employee Indy, when y'all gonna come? No. I tried to do a show from Employee Indy, and they told me the state wouldn't allow it. They did. They said workforce development wouldn't allow it. So that's the other thing. I'm going to go back to the governor and say, okay, I was nice to your guy. I want to do a show from an Employee Indy location. If the community obviously doesn't know what they do, we're going to figure that out. Let me go to D right quick. Then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi, D.
Hi. Now, I will agree that there need to be an increase in the minimum wage. But on the other hand, the people who provide security and safety for this country, our soldiers, they don't get minimum wage. If you figure out what they make a month and divide it by what people have for minimum wage, they don't make $15 an hour. So in the same token, maybe somebody should talk to Congress about giving them a raise because freedom ain't free.
I really don't know. I'm getting ready to look up because I really don't know what are, I should know that. What are military, I'm getting ready to look it up right now because she makes a good point.
You know, she does, Amos, and I fully support our military, and I do think that we need to do more to support the people that protect us at all levels. And, you know, and that's definitely something that, that Congress needs to look at.
Ooh, I just looked at
you. And how much was it?
Okay, a private with less than two years' experience. This does not include bonuses, allowance, and other benefits, like, you know, you get a house for free and you eat for free. The base salary for a private is $18,378. Which means if you're married, you're below the poverty level. A salary for a staff sergeant, an E6, is only $28,569. Ooh. That's if you got less than 2 years experience. If you got 6 years experience, you're at $35,500. That's less than a cop, I think. Okay. Wait, okay. What if, let's see, captains make with less than 2 years experience, almost 47,000. With 4 years experience, 62 grand. With 6 years experience, 64 grand. Ooh. Yeah, but that's an officer. That's all the private gets is 18 grand, not counting food or benefits and everything else?
Well, that's because they live on base in base housing. So, you know.
She has an excellent point.
Thank you for I would not have known that, honest to goodness.
And don't forget their medical benefits, because they're not the greatest either. Congress gets better medical benefits than the military does.
Stand up for our soldiers, girlfriend. Stand
and
up,
then they have a hard time finding a job when they get out, and that's deplorable.
An IMPD recruit, their opening salary is $39,000. And 30 bumps up to 62K. So just to put that in perspective.
So wait a minute. A recruit cop to go on our mean streets getting 30. A recruit 39, cop,
almost
39.
Almost 40.
A private who might have to go to Syria gets 8.
Less than 20.
I honestly thought it was much higher than that. See the things you learn on this program. I mean, that also means if we had a military base around here, the poverty level would be higher.
Even higher.
239-1310. 239-13. Let me go to Councilman Simpson right now. He's probably still shocked that our military gets less than an IMPD officer.
Oh, yeah. I was in the Army. So when you said that, I said, oh, no, they're down there with us. It's like you say, most of the time they're able to do that is because they can bring them on the base through family situations and stuff like that. Otherwise, they would be living just like most of the people out here in the world when they get out of the Army. And that's why most of them stay in the Army, because they know it's a better life and the government will take care of you and stuff like that. But I take my hats off to them. What I wanted to say to you is that your guests are absolutely right about what they're talking about, and I think that the real deal is that most of the reentry folks who come out, they all are in construction, trying to get a construction job, and the issue is, once again, is that the city don't encourage them to hire Marion County workers. And so Councilor Bob Ostley and myself, with this new development going on around Mass, the Red Cross, or any of them, we are requiring that they have 30 to 40% of Marion County workers in those zip codes in which one of your guests was talking about the zip codes. He's absolutely right. Most of the zip codes around the inner city are where most of the crime and where most of the people are low income. And we've been stressing very much in making sure they hire Marion County workers, because if you use Marion County taxes dollars to do development, then you are going to hire Marion County workers. And that's the only way we can get jobs, because otherwise we would never, ever get a job on any of this development coming down here. I guarantee you this Bloomington coming here building this transit situation, I guarantee you if we don't encourage it, they're not going to hire anybody from Marion County. And it's sad, because it's representative of what the 25th floor is representing. They say, you know, we want to help crime. But what have they done to help crime? And I think that for us out here, my district, and Ostley District, Brian Mayhern, I can keep going, Duke Oliver, all of us have the same problem. That is, there are no jobs out here for these folks to get employed. You know, it's a shame, but $11 and $10 jobs are what's out here.
And Councilman, you got a point. Let me get an email that I just got. Said, Amos, everything in that report has affected my family. My husband lost his job 2 years ago. He went to the unemployment office for the mandatory meetings before his federal unemployment ran out, and they did nothing to help him find a job. They would sit him in front of a computer, never trying to help point him in the direction of companies that would hire him or give him an interview. This has left me working two jobs and going to school so that when I finish, we can try to get out of the hole we are in. Oh, my goodness, what a testimony. 239-1310, 239-13. Let me take a quick break, come back with our remaining moments with our panel. This sister's letter. Husband's still without. She's working two jobs, going to school. They in a hole. If she's going to school, she might be treading water in a hole. That's another hole. How do they, and if they filled out the survey, he counts as unemployed, looking, which bumps up the unemployment rate, and the income, depending on how many are in the house, could be in below the poverty level. That's real world right there. 239-1310, more after these. All right, back to the phones quickly, and Anonymous. Anonymous, you got about a minute.
Hi, Ames, how you doing?
I'm fine.
I just wanted to make a comment concerning renting and the buying of a house. I'm renting it now, and also I was thinking of being a first time home buyer. But what's more attractive to as opposed to buying a home is that a lot of the rent people that are renting from apartments and so forth. If they're there, maybe let's say 5 years or better. Some of the apartments reduce their rent. So that kind of helps, whereas they don't have that problem with the rigor mortis and everything of just wanting to purchase a home.
Yeah, but here's the deal. There has always been a sizable percentage of households in the black community and in the general community as well that rents single-family homes or those double homes where you got in one big house, there's two, is split down the middle. So there are a significant number of people who live in a house, but they rent the house, and then that does raise the issue of, does the person who's renting a house keep up that property at the same level as the homeowner?
And unfortunately, the Republicans are not interested in increasing the minimum wage, but they're much more concerned with how they can give more tax breaks to companies, which as we, you know, with the data that we're receiving, has not helped out at all.
A couple of other things, Pastor Michael Jones, you're talking during the break. Is entrepreneurship, is that, we need to get more serious about entrepreneurship?
We 100% need to get completely serious about entrepreneurship. And even not just literally owning our own businesses, creating our own stuff, but even the mindset of an entrepreneur. Because, you know, part of the thing that really gets sometimes some of us, and us black and us poor, in trouble. You don't know how many people, for example, I have heard buy a car based on the car payment. Mm-hmm. They want to figure out what the payment is, but they're not paying attention to the fact that they may have bought a car that's worth $13,000. They're going to pay $30,000 for it because they're going to finance it for 10 years now, you can. And they're going to make a small payment. But they're going to pay for it three times because they're not thinking like an entrepreneur. They're thinking like a consumer.
Sure.
And if you think about it, you can rent. That's fine. But if you begin to start thinking about home ownership, not simply in the terms of I got a place to stay, but home ownership can even be a business. People have absentee landlord. If you're going to live in a city like Indianapolis, but you make good money, buy some good property, get a property management company, rent those places out. And then when you move to New York or Chicago or whatever, you have a steady stream of income coming in. You have to start thinking differently. And entrepreneurship is critical. It always has been. From Madam C.J. Walker back in history through people coming out of slavery, when we could find a way to start something from fried chicken to making hair products to selling Fuller Brush to selling insurance, when we started doing that kind of stuff, we provided for our family.
One other thing, it used to be African Americans didn't worry necessarily about the cost if a politician came along and said we need to raise taxes. There was never that kind of worry about it. I'm hearing more from African Americans in some of these tax debates or, you know, I don't want to pay that, whether it cherishes what you were talking about with the blue car, Indy cars and the light company, or, about the preschool. Yeah, I kind of like the preschool, but don't take this $30 away from my, given the economic pressures these last several years, are we seeing more in our community some of that tax revolt that we've seen in the general community say, hey, I ain't paying for none of this stuff for right now?
I think people are being a lot more conservative when it comes to thinking about their dollars. And the reason why is because they're trying to do more with less. Mm-hmm. And as people are doing more with less, they're doing like Pastor Jones. A lot of people are already watching and seeing, okay, did my utility bill? We heard a young lady just on the phone that was saying, hey, maybe I would consider buying a home, but then I have to think about utilities and those increasing and going up. And so people are having those conversations where they're looking and they're thinking more about what that impact is going to be and the expenses for food, right. Food increasing, you know, is one. Housing going up. Gas is going up. And so people are really starting to watch as they count those nickels and dimes and saying, you know what, I believe in helping and taking care of and doing all the things that I need to do, but my household right now is struggling and household income is relatively what? Flat. Right. And if that is flat, then also it used to be a time when people would see increases. A lot of the jobs, as they're streamlining, you don't see the same rate of even the cost of living adjustments that are happening or taking places or promotions that are happening because people are streamlining, taking out that director that used to be the next level and keeping people at the levels where they are.
So Drew, let me see if I can sneak Buck right quick at 239-1310. Buck, you got 45 seconds.
I'll make it quick. How you doing, Amos? You know, I love the show.
Thank you.
I guess it's just amazing because I got a program that I'm starting and it's learning on the lines of saving people money, buying houses for folks, and getting people jobs at the same time. And I got a plan already and plan that I can build a $125,000 house for $70,000. And people say, well, how can you do that? Because I'm not trying to be a contractor to take everybody's money. I'm trying to get people in the houses and get people jobs to make money. And it's a program that I know that's going to go and it's going to fly. It's going to help ex-offenders, ex-juveniles, you know, people that want to buy houses, people want to live in houses, they want houses of their own. And it's all about, I'm not trying to make money. It's all about getting people in houses and homes and giving them a place that they can call a home and that kind of stuff. So I'm not the one, you know, I taught school 15 years, so I'm not trying to make money. I'm just trying to help people out to get housing. So,
all right, we appreciate that. Again, we want to thank State Representative Cherish Pryor, Erica Smith of the Star, Tammy Butler Robinson of Engaging Solutions, Pastor Michael Jones, Progressive Missionary Baptist Church, Mark Russell of the Urban League. Not only will you hear this broadcast on praiseindy.com, we'll have a link to the data we're talking about. Because, you know, if you actually went and filled out the survey, at least you ought to know how it all came out.